Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, September 25th, 2014. South Sudanese analyst says the peace talks in Ethiopia might yield results this time around.
It will be them cutting their own deals and forgiving each other, not holding each other accountable and giving each other percentages and positions. But is there a genuine peace for South Sudan? I don't know about that.
And Central Equatorial State officials are calling for an end to land grabbing and cattle raids.
We need to take our executives through conflict analysis. What are the issues? What do we mean by conflicts? So that we do not undermine certain issues.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The peace talks in Ethiopia have dragged on for several months now, with little progress to show for it. But at least one analyst is expressing hope this sixth round of talks, which began this week between the South Sudan's warring parties, will mark a turning point. A policy analyst with the Juba-based Saad Institute says the government and the rebel negotiators have managed to limit the participation of other stakeholders who he believes were blocking progress at the talks. Philip Thorne Aleu has more for VOA from Juba.
Analyst Abraham Awolich says allowing other political parties, faith-based groups and civil society activists to come to the table may have seemed like the right thing to do, but was not helping the peace process along. Awolich says the talks got bogged down during previous rounds, in fact, because government and rebels delegates are not interested in sharing power with other stakeholders.
They want to make the table less populated so that there are not many actors on the table who are going to take the piece of cake. And so that is why you see recently members of the political parties not given a space on the table, indirectly being asked not to travel. So that is because the opposition party, the political parties here, want 40% of the power. And I think both the warring parties would agree that they don't like that. And so they want to eliminate that participant.
Awolich says he believes the government and rebels will eventually agree on a permanent peace document, but it is not likely to address all of the underlying issues that cause the conflict.
They will agree to something that all others may not be happy about. It will be them cutting their own deals and forgiving each other, not holding each other accountable and giving each other percentages and positions. But is that a genuine peace for South Sudan? I don't know about that. And so it seems like the fact that the IGAD mediators have now allowed the parties to actually sit together and begin to discuss, I could see the images on the television yesterday, you know, people sitting around and they seem fairly comfortable with each other. So it is most likely that they will narrow the gap. They will narrow their differences.
Awolich says it is much better for two warring parties to agree to stop the fighting and the suffering of South Sudanese than try to satisfy the interests of all stakeholders at this time. Mapor Malwal, a Juba-based writer, says he is not optimistic the government and rebels will resolve their differences and restore peace during this last round of talks. He points to the recent fighting between government and rebel forces in Upper Nile State's Renk town to underscore his belief that the two sides are still far apart when it comes to a negotiated settlement to end the more than 9 months of conflict. Malwal blames the rebel for starting the conflict, but says the government shares responsibility for the prolonged fighting.
I think the government is serious about the talk. I think they are serious about the talk. But they may not be serious that way because some members of the government might be willing to sort out this problem militarily.
Still, Awolich says he does not believe the recent upsurge in fighting in Upper Nile and Unity States destroy the ability to reach a negotiated settlement.
In any armed rebellion, when there is negotiation, each side tries to send a message that we are still here. If you don't negotiate in good faith, we are a force to reckon with. And so I think that is what it was. It may continue or it may cease because maybe the rebels have already made their statement that they are there and they are threatening. And maybe the government made its statement that they are there to defend it. So it is something to be expected.
Awali says IGAD mediators must show leadership. They must not be swayed by demands from either side. The 9 months of fighting has uprooted nearly 2 million people and left at least 10,000 people dead. For BOA News, I am Philipton Aleu in Juba.
Disputes over land and border and cattle rustling are all too common in central Equatorial State. The deputy governor wants to change that. So yesterday, he and other officials in Juba opened a training workshop to equip state officials with conflict mitigation skills. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu has the story from Juba.
Deputy Governor Manasseh Lomole told the state ministers, advisors, county commissioners, town mayors, and security officials that they all must work together.
We embrace peace, peaceful coexistence, and make sure that we learn the techniques to add to our traditional coping mechanisms for peace and peaceful coexistence.
But peaceful coexistence among the different ethnic communities, especially during the ongoing conflict, is not easy. Lomole advises authorities to use appropriate language in order to avoid inflaming tensions.
We need to learn the language we should use when resolving conflict. We need to know how effective and effectively we should communicate with one another. We need to know that language alone and a tongue can set a nation ablaze. So we need to know the best means of communicating with one another in good times and in bad times.
Lomole says land grabbing, border disputes, and cattle rustling continue to be the main causes of violent clashes between ethnic communities. Helen Moshali-Boro, head of Central Equatorial State's Conflict Mitigation and Stabilization Office, organized the training.
We need to take our executives through conflict analysis. What are the issues? What do we mean by conflicts, so that we do not undermine certain issues, because for example, some of the border issues may be silent, but at any moment it can come up. And most of our executives are also leaders in their own communities. Where issues are beginning to brew, they can actually, from learning in this workshop, gaining their knowledge and skills, they will be able to see how to resolve the issues.
The state's agriculture and forestry minister, Jacob Lupai, hopes to learn more than a few new skills by the end of the workshop.
This workshop is very, very significant, and of course, this is very relevant. As you know, South Sudan is going through difficult times now. We have got a rebellion, we have got people dying unnecessarily. And this workshop on conflict resolution is very important and timely, and it reminds us of how we could resolve our problems of conflicts.
Yei Municipal Council Mayor Santo Lasuba agrees.
As a mayor of Yei Municipality, there are a lot of challenges which are facing the municipality or Yei River County in general, like the dispute of the border disputes and people, ethnicity, diversity of the ethnicities within the municipality.
Lasuba and others here say learning how to deal with the wide diversity of ethnic communities is key to peacefully resolving conflicts. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
People living with HIV/AIDS in South Sudan say they face a lot of challenges, including lack of access to treatment and discrimination. Health officials say they are focusing on educating young people around South Sudan about HIV/AIDS to try to end discrimination and stop the spread of HIV/AIDS. Mungome Debs Rakarinj files this report.
Evelyn Letio is a member of the Association of People Living with HIV/AIDS. She says people living with the virus are stigmatized and discriminated against in every aspect of their lives.
People who have come out and talk about their status openly are laid off from jobs. They are called graves, moving corpses. The community leaders, especially when the couples are living, they are living in discordancy. One is positive and the other one is negative. Especially when it is a woman, the woman is given a divorce and she is hurried to go get out of the house of the man without anything, without picking anything.
Letio says the organization does not have enough funds to educate the community about HIV/AIDS. She says people with HIV/AIDS do not have the money to start up income-generating activities that would help them to live better lives. But the main challenge is accessing care.
The services also are very poor, and they are far away from where the people are. You find the ART centers are concentrated, they are mainly on the major towns, and then a few counties. But most of the places, you see how big a county is. You find in a county there is one. And then people to move so many kilometers, more than 20 kilometers, and there is no public transport.
Dr. Emmanuel Lino, the director of AIDS activities at the National Minister of Health, says the government is doing all it can to reach the thousands of people who need treatment. He says he's aware that the people do not have enough information about AIDS, if they have any.
Like we hear, you know, popular musicians like Chameleon coming to Juba. This is the places where we need even to go and have even a talk or two. We need even to very first give them like condom awareness, because young people are not interested in these long workshops and so forth.
This year, he says, the Minister of Health is concentrating on programs that educate young people about HIV/AIDS. The plan is to tap into youth culture to pass the message about the illness and how to prevent it. He says health workers will be visiting places like discotheques to sensitize the population about HIV/AIDS. Habib Dafala Awongo, the Director General for Program Coordination at South Sudan's HIV/AIDS Commission, or SAC, says his organization is holding football, basketball, and volleyball tournaments, as well as music and drama activities to educate South Sudanese about HIV/AIDS. Awongo says it is important not only to fight discrimination, but also to avoid new infections. He says many of the programs run by SAC are focused on young people.
In South Sudan, we know very well that the youth comprise the majority of the reproductive age, and they are also the most active sexually.
Awongo says SAC will also organize TV and radio talk shows about the viral disease. Renate Ehmer, the country director for UNAIDS, says targeting South Sudanese young people with anti-HIV/AIDS messages is a step in the right direction.
You see that 51% of South Sudan population are young people below 18 years of age, and 72% are below 30 years. Most of young people do not have access to sexual and reproductive health services, including information on HIV prevention and commodities such as condoms.
A household survey conducted by UNAIDS in South Sudan in 2010 found that only 11% of women between the ages of 15 and 24 had correct information on preventing HIV/AIDS. In 2013, UNAIDS said 14,000 South Sudanese aged 15 and older were living with HIV/AIDS. More than half of them were women, and 18,000 were children, aged 14 and younger. For VOA News, I am Mugume Devsura Karinj.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, human rights activists protest in New York over the UN's lack of action over atrocities being committed in Darfur. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
At work, does it make a difference if your boss is a man or a woman? Why or why not?
To me, I've been analyzing that sometimes it should be considered, but all in all, it's depend on personality, the quality of person, who is your boss. Yeah. If your boss is somebody who with high intellectualism, it's going to be good. But sometimes you have some people who are somehow confused.
No, to my side, it doesn't make any difference. I feel free with both a woman or a man. It doesn't make any difference.
There's not much difference if you understand the principles of the work. Civilization has taken over. If you're educated, it doesn't matter whether it's a woman or a man who is your boss. So it depends on the relationship and the principles that you're working on.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. As world leaders gather this week at the United Nations headquarters in New York, rights groups are raising their voices, demanding an investigation into the human rights abuses in Sudan. They are also calling on the United Nations to enforce its resolution to stop the killing of innocent Sudanese civilians in Darfur, Southern Kordofan, and Blue Nile State. VOA fellow Nabil Biagio has more.
Over the weekend, hundreds of Sudanese and human rights activists rallied across the street from the United Nations headquarters in New York City to protest what they say is genocide and mass atrocities in Sudan. They also delivered a letter signed by 68 organizations to the President of the United Nations Security Council, U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power, urging the UN to uphold its charter.
The international community has failed to respond adequately to repeated and continuing atrocity crimes, which now have been committed over decades by the government of Sudan, in South Sudan, in Darfur, in Abyei, in South Kordofan, Nuba Mountains, in Blue Nile, in Eastern Sudan, and even in Khartoum itself.
That's Eric Cohen, the founder of Act for Sudan, a U.S.-based advocacy group with the mission of ending genocide and mass atrocities in Sudan, and the lead signatory to the joint letter. The letter cites recent violations of civil and political rights in Sudan. It calls for enforcing the UN resolutions regarding imposing asset freezes and travel bans on individuals responsible for atrocities in Darfur and southern Kordofan. The signatories plead with the UN to take serious action against the government of Sudan that will, in their words, reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights, in the dignity and worth of the human person, in the equal rights of men and women, and nations large and small.
Sudan's egregious and continuing non-cooperation with the United Nations Security Council resolutions and the UN more broadly requires serious negative consequences.
The UN Security Council has voted to put in place travel bans against government officials and military commanders ordering the bombing on civilians and freeze their assets. But enforcement is another thing. It has not happened. Last week, a documentary about the ongoing human rights abuses in the Nuba Mountains was released. It's called Khartoum's War on Sudan, When Civilians Are the Enemy. It can be viewed online at nubareports.org. Nuba Reports is a media team based in Blue Nile and Nuba Mountains, funded by various human rights groups and media organizations. It documents what they say is the daily bombing of civilian villages by the Khartoum government. Ryan Boyett is the founder of Nuba Reports.
So the film is basically illustrating 3 years of human rights violations that have been taking place in the war zone, primarily in South Kordofan State, but it also highlights areas of Darfur, Blue Nile, and even some areas in Khartoum as well.
Speaking from an undisclosed location in Blue Nile, Boyett says the government in Khartoum is aware of his work.
In the past, my house has been the target of a bombing. 6 bombs were dropped in a line on my house, and actually two of our reporters were at my house at the time.
No one was killed in the attack. Boyett's film, Khartoum's War on Sudan, was released a few days ahead of a UN Human Rights Council meeting on Sudan underway in Geneva this week. A civil society delegation as well as a Sudanese government delegation are attending the meeting. The council is also reviewing a report by a UN independent expert. A member of the civil society group who did not want to be identified says her delegation is pressing the council for a stronger mandate to insist that their expert be allowed to travel freely in Sudan. Right now, the expert is escorted by a government team to government-controlled areas only. The Human Rights Council is expected to turn over their findings to the UN Security Council within days. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
The You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Syrian activists say a suspected U.S.-led airstrike has killed 14 militants and 5 civilians in northeastern Syria. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said today the overnight strikes hit the Deir el-Zour and Hasakeh areas. Yesterday, U.S. forces and those from Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates conducted a total of 13 airstrikes in eastern Syria as part of an operation against the Islamic State organization. Sierra Leone's government has placed 3 more districts under isolation as it tries to fight the outbreak of Ebola. President Ernest Bai Koroma said today the isolation of Port Loko and Bombali in the north and Mayamba in southern Sierra Leone will pose difficulties for people there, but that the lives of everyone are more important. 2 districts of the county's 14 districts were already under isolation, and the move comes days after Sierra Leone ended a 3-day nationwide lockdown because of the deadly Ebola virus. And finally, hundreds of Islamic extremists have surrendered in Nigeria following the military's recent air and ground attacks against the Boko Haram militant group. The Nigerian Defense Ministry said yesterday it had killed hundreds of insurgents in the country's northeast, including a high-profile member of Boko Haram. The military has claimed Sheka was killed in battle last year. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is concerned about South Sudan's dire humanitarian conditions. Addressing the 69th UN General Assembly in New York yesterday, Mr. Kenyatta praised the Regional Bloc Intergovernmental Authority for Development, or IGAD, for mediating the off-again-on-again peace talks now taking place in the Ethiopian town of Bahardar.
As we meet here, South Sudan also remains in turmoil. Kenya and other IGAD countries have invested considerable effort to end this tragedy and spare the people of South Sudan further suffering. Regrettably, however, progress has been slow.
President Kenyatta urged the international community to do more to support peace efforts for South Sudan.
We cannot let this young nation and its people down. At this assembly, I make a special plea for South Sudan, for no nation has over the years suffered as much neglect from the international community.
Kenya played a significant role in the peace deal signed in 2005 between the government of Sudan and the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, which ended the longest civil war in Africa. The East African leader says South Sudan's problems can be resolved if the international community commits its energy towards finding a lasting solution.
No country today remains as desperately in need of rapid and transformative economic and social development as South Sudan. We cannot allow a return to political chaos, to economic collapse, or social desperation.
Mr. Kenyatta says the leaders of South Sudan also have to do their part to help their country.
I implore the leaders of this young nation to demonstrate determined and enlightened leadership and to make peace without further delay. Such action will save the people of this nation enormous suffering and offer hope for a better future.
President Salva Kiir is in New York for the UN General Assembly and is scheduled to address the gathering on Saturday. South Sudan in Focus will broadcast Mr. Kiir's speech live from New York during a special broadcast on Saturday evening. The International Committee of the Red Cross says millions of people in Africa who are facing violence, hunger, and displacement, including more than 1 million South Sudanese, are in desperate need of assistance. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from ICRC headquarters in Geneva. The humanitarian group is appealing to the international community to do more.
International Committee of the Red Cross Operations Director Dominic Stillhart just visited the Central African Republic, South Sudan, and Somalia. He says these conflict-ridden countries are in desperate need of more international support. He says the humanitarian situation in CAR is serious, with thousands of civilians killed in fighting between Muslim Seleka rebels and Christian anti-Balaka fighters. Steelhart says most of the more than 500,000 internally displaced people are too scared to return home. He says he does not believe the fighting is based on religious differences. Nevertheless, it has resulted in a de facto division of the country between the Muslim Seleka-controlled northeast and the government and Christian anti-Balaka in the southwest. Steelhart tells VOA the best hope for overcoming divisions in the country lies in mutual interest in having a stronger economy.
Economically, it would make a lot of sense to work together again, because especially the Muslims populations and communities, they were the main traders of the country, and Bangui is suffering from the absence of that trade community. So there may be some economic incentives for people to start living together again, which will then gradually ease some of the tensions, the serious tensions that now exist in the country.
40% of ICRC's operational budget goes toward Africa. South Sudan costs about $139 million, and the ICRC has appealed for an additional $19 million, mainly to provide food for 150,000 people until the end of the year. It has provided food to more than 500,000 people since December. But the United Nations reports nearly 4 million people in South Sudan are in need of food aid. Steelhart says it is too early to speak about famine.
We will see probably at the end of the rainy season when access will be improving whether we can really speak about famine. What we know, there are pockets of serious food insecurity, but there is also a large-scale humanitarian operation that is underway and that may well prevent the worst from happening. But the situation is critical.
Steelhart says the situation in the Somali capital Mogadishu has improved, but in areas under the control of al-Shabaab militants, the situation is dire. He says of the 2.9 million people in need of food, 1 million internally displaced in Somalia are most at risk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Waka Waka by Shakira.
Choosing your battles, pick yourself up and dust yourself off and back in the saddle. You're on the front line, everyone's watching. You know it's serious, we're getting closer, this isn't over. The pressure's off, you feel it, but you got it all. This is Africa. Samina, mina, eh, waka, waka, eh, Samina, mina, sangalewa. This time for Africa. Listen to your dad. This is our motto. Your time to shine. Don't wait in line. Hesitation. Today's your day. Feel it. You pave the way. Believe it. If you get down, get up. Oh, oh. When you get down, get up. Hey, hey. Tamina, mina, sangalewa. This time for Africa. Tamina, mina, eh, eh. Waka, waka, eh, eh. Tamina, mina, sangalewa. Anawa, ah, ah. Tamina, mina, eh, eh. Waka, waka, eh, eh. Tamina, mina, sangalewa. For Africa.
I will on my journey, biggie, biggie, mama, one A to Z. My sister sell on my journey, biggie, biggie, mama, from east to west. My city, waka, waka, my A, waka, waka, my A, tongue is in, so my zimu, yeah. But this is Africa.
We have been listening to Shakira with the song Waka Waka. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Please join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
time for Africa. Jungle.